And obviously some degree of frustration on the kisser of Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Yeah, that look reminds me of the look on the face of Princess Di.
You mean after the recent auto accident?
No, after the Queen invited her over to the Royal Palace for one of those McDonald's Mad Cow burgers.
This is episode 172 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off, a bonus edition of the podcast this week. It is Wednesday, August 10th, 2011. I am the Solid Monster here and have a little bit of time this week. Figured let me do an early edition, a midweek edition of the Sound Off here. Talk a little bit about Raw. Got some SmackDown spoilers to go through. So if you don't want to hear what happens on Friday's go-home show to SummerSlam this Sunday, you might want to skip that part. Talk a little bit about SummerSlam as well and take some of your questions. So we'll get into all that good stuff. Let's talk about Raw from this past Monday night. It was the go-home edition of Raw, the 6 days before SummerSlam this Sunday. Not a great show. In fact, it was largely boring. I kind of dozed off a little bit at different points during the show, which is never a good sign. And it did redeem itself a little bit at the end. We'll get to that. That was probably the best part of the show. Kind of ironic given that the week before, the Triple H CM Punk stuff was actually the best part of the show, and that came at the very beginning. So basically, Raw's problem is that the creamy filling in the middle, like if Raw was a giant cookie, you know, you got the cookie crust on one side, the cookie crust on the other side, and in the middle, you've got vanilla cream. And I use the word vanilla on purpose, because that, to me, is Raw's biggest problem. It's all that vanilla cream and crap in the middle of the cookie that's just sitting there. And you got to get through it to get to the good part. If they could just find a way to make that stuff in the middle compelling and actually taste good, they might have something here. But this was a largely forgettable show. And quite frankly, it was kind of alarming in certain respects, given that they have not just the pay-per-view coming up this Sunday, but, you know, SummerSlam has traditionally been one of the big WWE shows of the entire year. It used to be one of the traditional big four. And even today, SummerSlam is probably the number two or three show of the year for the company. And, you know, for example, they only do WrestleMania Access, or something similar to WrestleMania Access, for SummerSlam and no other pay-per-views during the year. I mean, Mania is what it is. But either this year or last year, they began doing the Access-type events for SummerSlam, which, again, tells you all that you need to know about how important they think this show is. SummerSlam has been in Los Angeles now for a couple of years. They use it as an opportunity to hobnob and meet with certain Hollywood types out there to strike deals, and I guess because everybody thinks everybody in Hollywood is special. So SummerSlam's kind of a big deal. And at this point, SummerSlam feels like anything but a big deal. And it's WWE's job to make us care about this show. And the fact that there's four matches official for SummerSlam just a couple of days before the show. And obviously, when we get to Showtime on Sunday, there's going to be at least one or two matches added to the pay-per-view. But why do that? Why wait until the last minute on what is supposed to be one of your biggest shows of the year? You want people to buy it. You want a good number so at the next investors conference call, you can talk about how great SummerSlam did. It's on the rebound. Things are looking up. I don't see it. I don't see it at all. And what alarmed me was there were at least two matches on Raw Monday night that they either had or that they teased that I assumed were going to be saved for SummerSlam. And in fact, they just blew them off on Raw for free on television. Anyway, we'll get to all that in a second. Let's just start top of the show, our new COO, Chief Operating Officer, Triple H. I'm sure we're going to be seeing a lot more of him. I'm already sick, quite frankly, of seeing Triple H. So he comes to the ring, and you know, if I could get a nickel, as the old expression goes, for all the times that somebody came out on a wrestling show, and even in WWE, I think they're as guilty of this as anybody. When somebody comes out and says that this match at the pay-per-view or tonight or whatever is going to change the WWE forever, it's going to change the landscape of the WWE forever, I would be a rich man, and I would either not be doing this show, or more realistically, I would be doing this show in an air-conditioned luxury studio, self-financed, I might add, which I am not. You know, why make that comment just a couple of weeks after the Money in the Bank pay-per-view when all we heard about was how this main event between John Cena and CM Punk can change, it will change the landscape of WWE, certainly if Punk wins. And guess what? Punk won. He won the WWE Championship. He left the company, albeit for a week. And guess what? It's what, 3 weeks later, and not a goddamn thing has changed. I mean, literally not a goddamn thing has changed. So Punk has a belt. So does John Cena. And I was thinking about this the other day. For all the talk about how it's nice to see them giving CM Punk a chance, and they're putting the title on him, and it's such a big deal, You know, I guess, but here's my thing. After all these years, CM Punk finally gets the WWE Championship. You know, he was the ECW champion, he was the World Heavyweight Champion. We all know what WWE thinks of those belts. Okay, they wipe their ass with it. He finally wins the WWE Championship. And not 1 week later, the title, even if it's not physically the actual belt, the title is back around the waist of John Cena. So CM Punk gets his little reign here of a couple of weeks or whatever it ends up being as the WWE champion, but at the same time, John Cena is the WWE champion. So that's their way of giving Punk a title reign. Here you go. We'll make you the WWE champion. You can have it for at least a couple of weeks, but we also put the belt on this guy as well. So it's like they're so terrified, not just to take the title off Cena, but to give somebody else a legitimate shot for more than like 2 weeks, that they have to do stuff like this. It just, I don't know, it just bugs me. But anyway, Triple H claims that this Sunday, SummerSlam, WWE is going to change forever. Whatever, it never does. We all know that. And he inserts himself into the main event as the special referee. Now, I understand they're doing a storyline here. Perhaps it's going to lead to a CM Punk Triple H match. In fact, I think it's inevitable that's what we're going to get. It's just a matter of when. Is it going to happen at the Survivor Series? Is it going to happen at Night of Champions? Can they possibly wait and be patient and hold off on that match until WrestleMania? At this rate, the way they're burning through these storylines, I don't think so. I mean, if they could even hold their horses until Royal Rumble, I would be stunned. So we're going to get a match between the two of them. It's going to happen in the next few months. It's just a question of when. And it's a question of what facilitates that match. Is Triple H going to screw CM Punk over this Sunday in the main event? We know he doesn't like Punk. He went on television and said, personally, this is what I think of Punk, and it ain't good. He thought Punk had a big ego. He thought he was overrated. He threatened to smack the stupid tattoos off his body. Triple H says he's doing what's good for business, but he does not like CM Punk. On the other hand, Triple H and Cena have had their issues as well, although they seem to get along more, you know, more naturally, which would lead one to believe that CM Punk is in fact going to be screwed on Sunday, which tells me that we're not going to necessarily see that. I'll have some SummerSlam thoughts and predictions in a little bit, but the big announcement, Triple H, guest referee for the match at SummerSlam, basically telling people there's going to be some sort of screwy finish. Whether or not Triple H goes heel or he helps one guy over the other, and I don't think he necessarily will. I think that would be too obvious. But, you know, it's not... Look, this is the rematch. This is not the first match. This is not the first meeting between John Cena and CM Punk, okay? And anybody who knows anything about sequels knows that, by and large, as a general rule, the sequel never matches the original. The original always supersedes the sequel, with a few exceptions. You know, I've heard from people that The Godfather Part 2 is every bit as good as The Godfather Part 1, if not better. And I've never seen The Godfather Part 2, at least not in full. I've seen bits and pieces. Come to think of it, I don't know that I've ever seen any of The Godfather movies from start to finish without a break. I think I've only seen parts. So there are a few examples of this, but anybody going into SummerSlam thinking that the match between Punk and Cena is going to be better than the match they had at Money in the Bank, you know, maybe from a match perspective, there'll be, you know, some new stuff they put in there. Maybe the LA crowd will be almost as boisterous as the Chicago crowd. There's no way in my mind that LA is going to top Chicago. And the crowd was a very big part of that match last month. So right off the bat, I think we all need to temper our expectations as far as that goes. Now you've got Triple H in there, and to me, the focus is going to be on him. The focus is going to be on Triple H. Is he call it down the middle? Is he leaning more towards Cena? I'm sure they'll build tension between him and Punk and him and Cena as the match goes on. You know, very similar it could be to the Bret Hart Undertaker main event at SummerSlam 97. You had Shawn Michaels as the guest referee, and nobody knew whether or not Shawn was going to be partial one way or the other. Bret Hart was the big heel going into the match. Obviously, he and Shawn had no love lost. And for the most part, if you'll recall, Shawn called the match right down the middle, probably as a little bit of a swerve. You know, people probably expected him to be partial. He was not. He called a fair match. And then at the very end, there was a spot where Bret provoked him, spat in his face. There was a chair in the ring. Shawn went to use the chair, accidentally hit The Undertaker, and you know, caused Undertaker to lose the championship to Bret Hart. Would not shock me at all to see a similar finish. I'm not saying right down to the steel chair, but a situation at the pay-per-view where, again, Hunter does not necessarily show favoritism one way or the other. He pretty much will call it right down the middle until the very end when something happens. There's some sort of accident, there's some sort of mishap, and then you'll get your finish. But To me, it takes a little bit of the edge off, because now all of a sudden the attention, instead of it being on Punk and Cena, the attention is on Triple H. So they announced that there's going to be a big contract signing. That's our main event of the show. And each of the participants in the WWE Championship match at SummerSlam will be in a match tonight on Raw, they say. And I actually couldn't believe it at first when I heard that they were actually going to have Punk wrestle on the final Raw heading into SummerSlam. Punk has not wrestled a match since Money in the Bank. And I understand that he's re-signed in storyline, so he's just another WWE superstar now. But there's still some aura that is around him. And why you couldn't just hold off and have his first match back be against Cena at SummerSlam, I'm not quite sure, but whatever. Cena one-on-one with Jack Swagger beats him clean. Attitude adjustment 1-2-3. I actually don't have a problem with this. They did the same thing with Punk later in the show. Punk came out. He had a one-on-one match with Mr. Money in the Bank, Alberto Del Rio. And he beat Del Rio clean. The finish was, I think, a little bit botched. It looked like Del Rio was almost frightened. He was almost scared to take the go-to-sleep, which has broken a nose or two in the past. And he took it a little awkward. He looked kind of an awkward landing on that move. But nonetheless, 1-2-3, clean finish for Punk. And again, I don't have a problem with this because Cena and Punk are the two biggest stars on the brand. They are your WWE champions. You want them to be strong and to look good going into the pay-per-view, the biggest match that they have on that card Sunday. They should get a clean win over Jack Swagger. They should get a clean win over Del Rio. The only thing that confuses me is the fact that, you know, Del Rio is kind of the chosen one right now. And he's going to cash in Money in the Bank at some point, perhaps as early as SummerSlam, who knows. And he will be WWE champion. You would think they would want him to look a little bit stronger, maybe put somebody else, put anybody else other than Del Rio in that spot. You couldn't find another heel on Raw to put in that spot. But I guess in the end, it really doesn't matter. This is kind of WWE's MO. When somebody is going to move on to something bigger and better, if they're going to win a championship or something, it is not unlike the company to beat them at least once, if not put them even on something of a losing streak before the ultimate payoff comes. And to Del Rio, losing a match to Punk on Raw, it ain't a big deal. So I actually had no problem with that. You want your two guys to look strong going into the pay-per-view. And Swagger, look, do I wish that they had a better role for Jack Swagger? Of course. He's better than what they do with him. But Swagger is a mid-card heel. He's a mid-card jabroni for the most part on that brand. So, you know, what do you expect? That's the role that he fills, and I have no problem with that. Rey Mysterio came out for a match with The Miz. Now, Mysterio apparently injured his knee at a house show. I believe it was over the weekend. It was a couple of days before Raw. And I believe Rey went for an MRI possibly on Monday. And as I record this podcast here midday on Wednesday, I've not heard any sort of update as to whether or not the injury is a serious one, if it's a minor injury, if it is a tear or something to that effect. That is just horrible news. It's horrible for Rey. It's horrible for WWE. Rey has been one of the impact players on that Raw brand. He was the WWE champion, albeit for an hour and a half or whatever it was a couple of weeks ago, and easily the de facto number two babyface on that brand. Unless you count Punk as a babyface. I kind of look at Punk more as what Steve Austin was early on, as a little more ambiguous. You know, he kind of is in that shades of gray category right now. He's not really a heel, but he's not really a babyface. But apparently the knee that Rey injured, he tweaked it, was the way it was described initially. And it may be more than a tweak. It's the knee that's been operated on about 5 or 6 times. This is the knee that has given him trouble for a good portion of his career. And that would tend to make you think that it might not be such great news, but we don't know. We don't know. But anyway, he came out, obviously not able to wrestle a match. And The Miz, who was his scheduled opponent, and again, before this angle was shot and they were teasing Miz versus Mysterio, I thought to myself, you know, Rey Mysterio and The Miz are two of the biggest stars on Raw. You know, in fact, if you want to look at feuds and you match guys up, you got Cena and Punk right now at the top of the food chain. Miz and Mysterio would probably be right on that next level below them right now. And neither guy has a match at the pay-per-view. They've had one or two matches recently. They actually had a great match a couple of weeks back when Rey beat Miz to win the championship. Wouldn't it make sense to get them on SummerSlam and have a match? And when they teased that the match was going to happen after the commercial, I couldn't believe it. And I wondered if it was an angle alert. Perhaps Rey was going to get attacked, and then they would build to a match at SummerSlam. I was half right. Rey came out, Miz attacked him on the ramp, beat the crap out of him, left him laying, And there will be no Rey Mysterio match at SummerSlam. And again, I think that has more to do with the injury, so I can't really fault WWE for that. Perhaps they were going to do Miz and Mysterio, and when Rey got hurt, they decided to do this. Unfortunately, that leaves Miz without an opponent for SummerSlam. In fact, right now he has no match. I would expect that he'll come out, and if Triple H doesn't put him in a match, Miz at least would come out and do some sort of promo, since it is LA, it is SummerSlam. He's been the focal point of a lot of advertising for the event. Miz has to be on that show in some capacity. It just is amazing to me that he has no match. You know, here we are now at 3 or 4 more days away from SummerSlam, and there's no match for The Miz. So The Miz beat up Mysterio, went on the mic. He wanted a forfeit win. Triple H said no. He sent Kofi Kingston out. And again, a match that we've seen a bunch of times before, but this was a damn good match for what it was. You know, Kofi at one point had that huge high cross off the top rope. I mean, you know, the guy, in many ways to me, not just because he's black, but because of his unbelievable athleticism, he now fills the old Shelton Benjamin role in WWE, where, you know, here's a young guy who can go in there and really, you know, his vertical leap, his aerial ability, his ability to really wow you. You know, not too many guys are able to physically do the things that Kofi Kingston can do. I guess John Morrison could, but it reminds me of Shelton Benjamin. He used to be the guy when it came to that sort of stuff. And again, it always boggled my mind even then that Shelton never got a bigger push than he got. I know they looked at him as being very boring and he didn't have a personality, which, you know, his mic skills were lacking, which in many respects, they were not wrong to think that, but they still never gave the guy a chance. Kofi is a guy who we have seen before. He can deliver if given the chance. You know, Kofi's biggest missed opportunity, and it wasn't his fault, was back in 09 when they started giving him a push. He dropped the whole Jamaican accent or whatever the hell it was. They started announcing him from, you know, West Ghana, Africa. He came out, he talked like a normal person, and started to show a personality, got more time on the microphone. He sounded very natural on the mic, in fact. He had that feud with Randy Orton when Randy got presented with that race car. This was when Randy was still with Legacy. And they did that angle where Kofi was backstage, and he poured paint all over the car, and he keyed it. And, you know, he and Orton had some great matches. They did that angle in Madison Square Garden on Raw. I was there in the building. I was in MSG that night, which can be a tough crowd. And Kofi showed a lot of fire. He came out. He brawled with Orton through the crowd. He did the boom, boom drop off, you know, the some level of MSG through a table. It was, the place went crazy. You would think it was the second coming of Steve Austin. I mean, it was amazing. And to see where Kofi was at that point, and less than 2 years later, pretty much relegated right back to where he used to be, if not even lower. You know, for a company that has a huge problem when it comes to talent depth on their roster, and is looking to make new stars and push young guys. And then you look at what they did with a guy like Kofi, it makes you scratch your head. Anyway, he was very impressive in this match. Miz won. It was the right move to make, even though Miz doesn't have a match on pay-per-view. So I guess it doesn't matter. But, you know, Miz is another guy. Young guy, they gave him a shot. He shined through. He was in the main event of WrestleMania. Granted, it was one of the worst WrestleMania main events of all time. I can't lay all the blame on him. He gets part of the blame. But in terms of his mic skills and in his matches too, you know, Miz is great on the mic, but a lot of people, I don't think, give him enough credit. You know, he was number one in the Pro Wrestling Illustrated Top 500, and some people had a heart attack. Look, to me, when I was 12, I could give a shit about the PWI 500. I care even less about it now. Would I have put Miz at number one? Of course not. There's plenty of wrestlers all over the world, Mexico, Japan, who can probably wrestle circles around the Miz and have a personality of their own in their own country. But the point is, he's come a long way in a very short period of time. He completely reinvented himself. He got better in the ring. He improved on the mic. He was always good on the mic. He's even better now. He's a very well-rounded performer who deserves the main event spotlight. But heading into WrestleMania, when he had the WWE Championship, they treated Miz like a joke. Miz never got a legitimate win over anybody except John Morrison in a match on Raw in January and Jerry Lawler, who, by the way, had more than one match with Miz, and in the other matches, Lawler was this close to beating Miz before somebody screwed him or Michael Cole interfered. So even with Lawler, Miz, you know, it was not easy for Miz to beat the 60-year-old Jerry Lawler. I couldn't believe how they mishandled The Miz. And only after he lost the championship did I think, all right, maybe now they'll start to do something with him. And then you'll remember the whole stuff with Riley. Alex Riley must have beaten him, what, 3 times in a row? And I complained on this show, and I said, God, what, this guy, poor guy, he's completely impotent on this show. He's made to look like a damn fool. Now they're starting to make Miz look a little stronger. Week after week, he gets a win here, gets a win there. I still don't understand the logic behind what happened in Money in the Bank when he hurt his knee, came out on Raw the next night. Miz is a heel, but he valiantly fought back against two baby faces, including, I think it was Kofi, right? He beat Kofi on that show as well. He beat Riley. Had another dominant win over Kofi here. Good for the Miz. It's just a shame he doesn't have an actual match at SummerSlam to follow up on. We had Beth Phoenix beat Eve Torres again. Makes total sense. Beth is getting the championship match against Kelly Kelly at the pay-per-view, a match that probably only one person in the world cares about. His last name is Punk. We had a match between Dolph Ziggler, who I believe also suffered an injury, either an abdominal injury or a groin injury of some kind over the weekend. And so, of course, let's put him out there for a match on Monday night instead of letting him rest up a little bit. So Ziggler, I guess, was out there to face Alex Riley, and they did some stupid crap with Vicky, and this is the part of the show where I basically began to doze off. This was the death spot on this show. I really just could not care less about any of this. Riley had some momentum. Now he just seems to have fallen into that mid-card hell spot where I don't know that he can do anything to kind of climb out of it. He's just kind of there. Dolph Ziggler is a very talented guy who deserves better, I think. And I don't know, I can't blame Vicky because Vicky's always been so good in her role. I just think they send Vicky out there and they figure she's going to get heat no matter what. She's such a heat magnet. We can just send her out there for without any rhyme or reason and she'll get a reaction. And she kind of does. I mean, she'll say, excuse me, which is almost like cheap heat at this point because you know that by saying that she's going to get a reaction. But I feel like her act is just beyond played out at this point. I have people who will email me and post on Facebook, and they wish death upon Vicky, which, of course, is ridiculous, as though it's her fault. She plays her role very well. You don't have to like her. The whole point is that she's an unlikable character. But at one point, she had a big role on SmackDown, and she was kind of the GM or the assistant GM or what have you. And on Raw, it just hasn't been the same. It really, and you could say that about a lot of guys. That's why a lot of guys like being on SmackDown, because they're away from Cena and the main eventers or Triple H or whatever it is, and they're able to, get more airtime. Their matches tend to be a little bit longer. It's also the whole idea of Raw's live, and they feel like they have to do a lot in 2 hours. SmackDown, it's a little more relaxed. It's the taped show. I just feel like since she came on Raw, she's just gotten all mixed in with everybody else, and now she's just kind of boring. You know, her segments and Dolph, nothing ever happens. So I fought valiantly against the forces conspiring to put me to sleep, and somehow I managed to stay up, but this segment did absolutely nothing for me. Then we had R-Truth and John Morrison. This was the other match that made me scratch my head. All I could think was, why is this on Raw? Shouldn't this be at SummerSlam? I mean, let's backtrack a little bit here. Morrison and Truth used to be best friends, right? They used to be tag team partners. And they did the angle, I believe it was in May. It was April or May. I'm pretty sure it was May. They had that taped Raw, I think it was, from the UK. And R-Truth had earned himself a WWE Championship opportunity, if I remember correctly. And John Morrison beat him because R-Truth was stupid and put it up for grabs, and he lost. So, of course, R-Truth turned heel after the match. And what I remember is being a pretty good heel turn. Dragged it out for a little bit. He smoked a cigarette and all this other stuff. Got people talking, that's for sure. But it was a pretty dominant beatdown on Morrison. And then Morrison, shortly after that, he hurt his neck. He was nursing a neck injury. It was a great storyline excuse to get rid of him for a while. And you figure, all right, Morrison may be out for a couple of months. He dodged a big bullet. You know, he could have been out a lot longer, but he'll come back and they'll build to a pay-per-view match between the two of them. But nope. Morrison comes back. And mind you, John Morrison came back early from his injury. You know, the fear at first was that he might need spinal fusion surgery, which would keep him out at least a year. They found out he wouldn't need that. He had surgery. As it turned out, recovery time was taking a lot longer than they had anticipated. They figure, all right, he'll only be out for about 6 weeks or so. And it took longer. Let's just put it that way. To the point where he's still not recovered. Morrison did an interview about a week or two ago and claimed that he only had about 60% use or 60% mobility in the arm. That's been bothering him, and it takes time for the nerves to heal and regenerate themselves and all of this. Yeah, it will take a while for the nerves to regenerate and heal. If you're sitting on your couch, it will take a while. You know, now that you're actually wrestling and banging your body around, it's going to take even longer. You know, he ain't all there. But he wanted to come back. He wanted to be at SummerSlam. And that's the ironic part about this, is that he wanted to come back and to perform in L.A. and to perform at SummerSlam. And it looks like he may not be performing at all at SummerSlam unless they sign a quick rematch at the pay-per-view. And I could see R-Truth maybe confronting Triple H backstage and saying, you know, it's SummerSlam. I don't have a match. And so Triple H says, well, I can accommodate you, and, you know, you're going to be in a match. And as a matter of fact, it's next. And then Morrison comes out. Why? I don't know, since he got beat clean on this show. Maybe to try to get his win back, I guess. They could do that, but as of right now, Morrison has no match at SummerSlam. He came back, he rushed back for nothing. And the story behind it is this. I'm sure all of you have heard about it by now. If you're on SE Scoops, really any site you've heard, Melina, of course, was one of the cuts WWE made on Black Friday last week. No big surprise. She's been very outspoken about certain things. WWE was rubbed the wrong way by some of her tweets and her blog postings and her video blogs and all of this type of stuff. And she's been in the doghouse for a while, and you can tell. Just watch Raw. Anybody with two functioning eyeballs can watch the TV show and see that Melina, you know, when was the last time Melina won a match? I can't even remember the last time she won a match. She was losing singles matches, she was in tag matches, and taking the fall on the tag team matches. So this has been going on for a while. So then she gets fired. Now, of course, Melina and John Morrison have been dating off and on for quite some time. They're still together in a relationship. They got used to traveling on the road together, and apparently in the house show loop over the weekend, Melina traveled with Morrison. Now, mind you, this was a day or two after she had gotten fired. She was on the road with him, coming to the buildings, I guess. WWE was pissed. They were not happy about this at all. And in fact, apparently she drove John to the TV show on Monday night, tried to come into the building, and was told she was not allowed into the arena. And WWE alerted all of their security people and said she is not to be allowed into the building. And perhaps the reason for that, you may recall Beth Phoenix made a comment after she beat Eve on Raw Monday night. She grabbed the mic and made a comment about there will be no more stink faces, there will be no more splits. That was in reference to Melina. And perhaps the company didn't want to inflame things, you know, if Melina's backstage and she hears Beth saying that on TV, that they scripted these comments that are clearly referring to her. Perhaps she would react poorly, and it might cause a scene or a disruption backstage. Maybe that was their thinking. I don't know. Or maybe they just said, you know what? This woman was fired. She doesn't belong here anymore. I mean, imagine at your job. Let's say you work in an office, okay? You're an office worker. And they have to lay off 100 people. And you are one of those 100 people that get laid off. They don't even let you go back to your desk. They have a security guard escort you out of the building. You're fired. You're done. You're gone. And just imagine if the next week you just decided to show up at work and go to the office. I'm pretty sure they're going to have a problem with that and probably won't even let you in past the front gate. Okay? It's no different here. It's no different here. And it's not even like a person who got fired and it was really, they were just a victim of circumstances. It's budget cuts. They didn't really want to get rid of that person, but they had no choice. No, there were a lot of people in that company who just did not like Melina. So I won't say that she burned any bridges, but she did not leave on the best of terms. So that's why they didn't let her in. Is it petty on WWE's part? Perhaps. But you know what? Who cares? This is all high school level bullshit. And the point to all of this is that John Morrison losing clean, as he did to R-Truth on Raw the week before SummerSlam, blowing this match off on TV and having Morrison lose clean the way that he did, is pretty much a direct result of allowing Melina, I guess, to travel with him on the road and all that stuff that happened. You see the end result. You see the end result. Now, another thing I want to mention here about Morrison, okay? Now, I've picked on the guy before just because I think as a promo guy, he sucks. I mean, I've had people email me to try to defend him. How can you say that? He's actually good or he's getting better. No, he's not getting better. He sucks. Just admit it. He's a tremendous athlete. He's a pretty good wrestler. He is a shitty, shitty, shitty promo guy. Not the worst. I've heard worse, believe it or not, but he's no good. Maybe one day he'll turn the corner. Maybe one day they'll let him go out there and maybe it's because he's overly scripted, and if they let his real personality shine through, he'd be so much better. I don't know, but all I know is he sucks, okay? So I've ragged on him for that, but I've never said anything about his in-ring ability. As a talent, as a wrestler, he's great. You know, they talk about his parkour. He can do things that, you know what, if I was as flexible as he was, I still couldn't do it. I mean, it actually hurts me. I get like a cramp in my leg just to see him flying around the way that he does. It's very impressive. It's very, very impressive. However, nobody said that he was exactly the brightest bulb in the box. I'm watching this match, and R-Truth is on the outside of the ring. And I see Morrison getting a head start inside the ring, and he runs towards the corner. Okay? He's not running towards the ropes. He's running towards the corner. Towards the ring post, the turnbuckles. He vaults himself over the ring post. Some sort of corkscrew, suicide, plancha. I don't know what it was. It was ridiculous. He nailed it. I give him all the credit for that. He actually pulled it off. Got a big reaction from the crowd. I don't understand why a guy who just went through pretty serious neck surgery and has admitted that he's barely 60% recovered from it, would even attempt to do a move like that at all, let alone in a meaningless match on Raw, on free television that nobody is going to remember in 2 weeks. He barely cleared the turn. I mean, if you go back and watch that footage, he barely cleared the ring post. He might have even scraped up against it. That's how close it was. Could have been a disaster. So he does this move, and again, I know there's going to be people, you overanalyze too much. What's the big deal? He did the move. Who cares? It was nice to look at. Look, here's the deal. I'll use Undertaker as an example, okay? Undertaker has made it his business each year, the last couple of years at WrestleMania, to do his own little suicide dive over the top rope. And it's still an amazing move to see a 6'9", 300-plus-pound guy pull off something like that, especially a guy that's in his mid to late 40s. Very impressive, okay? The last couple of years, though, all of us, every single person listening to this show, has read, has heard about how The Undertaker is in constant pain. His body is breaking down. He's going to need a hip replacement and a knee replacement. And the poor guy is just, he soldiers on because he's part of that old school crew with that old school mentality. But it actually pains me now to watch Undertaker when he does that. I remember watching WrestleMania this year, his match with Triple H. I didn't think there was a prayer he would even attempt the move. Undertaker was off TV for so long. He came back for WrestleMania to do the match, to do the best he could. And then I figured he'll probably disappear again, possibly until the next WrestleMania, because he just can't do it anymore. He can't even do it part-time. And I figured there's no way he's dumb enough to do this. It's bad enough at WrestleMania 25 he almost killed himself. I mean, literally almost broke his neck and died in front of our very eyes because Sim Snuka, whoever it was, the fake camera guy, couldn't catch him. It was still stupid on his part to even try it. But there he is, WrestleMania this year, bouncing off the ropes, and sure as shit, diving over the top right onto Triple H. He nailed it. It was very impressive. But look, I'm not 10 years old anymore, I can't unlearn all of the knowledge that I have. I've read and heard everything that you've read and heard. I feel badly for the guy. I mean, the guy is in constant pain. His body is just breaking down all over the place. Anytime I see the guy, you see these pained expressions on his face. Guess what? That's not just selling there. That's more real than you can even imagine. So whenever Undertaker does that move, I'm sorry, I can't enjoy it. Maybe you can, because you don't give a shit. But I can't. It takes me out of it. It's just like, I don't want to see him do that. Just like I don't need to see Kurt Angle doing moonsaults off the top of steel cages. I don't have to see it. John Morrison, here's a guy coming back from neck surgery. Why are you doing this? If it were SummerSlam, I could see it. Even then, I wouldn't necessarily like it. Do it over the ropes. Why do you have to do it over the ring post? Who are you trying to prove that I can do this? Who are you trying to top? There's very few people in the company who could do the types of things that he can do in that ring. There's no reason to try stupid shit like that. And then, as if that wasn't bad enough, they do the spot. They're on the outside, and Morrison is standing up on the barricade, the dasher boards, whatever they are. And they do this thing where Truth basically pulls his leg out from underneath, and Morrison falls off, and as he's falling, smacks what is supposed to be the back of his surgically repaired neck. It was actually the upper part of his back. I mean, he pulled it off very well. Again, Morrison is very good at what he does. But still, this guy who just came off neck surgery is falling off the dasher boards, and even if it is padded, who cares? Why would you take the risk? I mean, I cannot remember a period in WWE history where overall, on both Raw and SmackDown, the rosters were as thin on talent, real talent, as they are right now, like main event level talent. And Morrison has been on the cusp of main event numerous times now. As it is, you dodged a huge bullet. This guy could have been out for over 12 months. But he rushes back, you let him come back, and you let him do stupid shit like this? I just don't get it. So he goes in the ring, and I guess the story of the thing now is that his neck is bothering him, which I'm sure it is. And R-Truth hits his finishing move and beats him clean, 1-2-3. And look, hey, you won't find a bigger advocate for clean, decisive finishes than me. I enjoyed it. It was nice to not have a fuck finish to a match. But boy, has his star fallen. So then we have the contract signing. That was your main event on Monday night. Again, to me, the best part of the entire show, and it wasn't even a match. I don't know what that means, but there you go. Punk is in the ring. Cena's in the ring. Triple H is in the ring with the executive vice president of talent relations, John Laurinaitis, who CM Punk kept referring to as the Funk Man. And I gotta say, you know, at first I had no idea what he's talking about. And he kept calling him the Funk Man, and then I realized after the fact that he was referring to him as the Funk Man, because as I had previously read, so I'm not sure why I didn't realize it right away, but Punk has referred to Laurinaitis as Funk Man or Funk Hauser for a long time. Basically, it's a spoof. There's a character on a television show on HBO called Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David Show, which, by the way, if you have never seen it before, you owe it to yourself to check out a couple of episodes. It is hilarious. There is a character on that show called Marty Funkhauser, who kind of looks like Laurinaitis, but more so he sounds. He has the same kind of voice that Johnny Ace does, so for those of you who had no idea and thought he was referring to Johnny Ace as Terry Funk or something, that is in fact not the case. It took me a little while to figure that out, too. And it was another great promo by CM Punk. Big surprise, you know. This is the sort of thing where I think if we see it a couple of more times, it's not going to have the same effect. You know, when Punk came out on Raw leading up to Money in the Bank to cut that first shoot promo that took everybody by storm, it caught everybody off guard, its impact was felt all throughout, I mean, everywhere, the mainstream media, everybody was just buzzing about it. And he did a similar thing when he was in the ring with Vince McMahon for that contract renegotiation, another home run performance, another one here. I don't know how many more of them he can churn out, because after a while, when you do these work shoots and you work in all these inside references and stuff, eventually it gets old. You know, as a case study, go ahead and see Russo, comma Vince. But Punk was on his A-game here. And he was going back and forth with Cena. He was actually going back and forth with Laurinaitis and Triple H as well. You know, and said that basically Triple H has Laurinaitis do his dirty work for him. He made reference to the very real cuts that WWE made. He mentioned Vladimir Kozlov getting fired and Chris Masters getting fired after he had, you know, gotten a lot better over the last year, which was a shoot. That is definitely true. He mentioned Harry Smith by name. He said he's not David Hart Smith, it's Harry Smith. So that was kind of cool. It was different. It's certainly not something we've seen WWE acknowledge in the past when they fire people legitimately. And Punk went on, and like I said, he made a lot of very valid points. At the end of the day, it's a storyline, but when you listen to the points that Punk made and the points that Cena made in retaliation, when it was over, great as Cena was in his role, and I will give Cena a lot of credit here. John Cena had one of his better promos in this segment, although it wasn't perfect. He had that stupid grin on his face, but he did a hell of a job. I mean, he hung in there with Punk, and these two guys together helped sell me on this match. I'm still not sure what I'm doing on Sunday or not as far as ordering the pay-per-view. I'm pretty sure I'll end up watching it, but they both did a hell of a sell job at the very end. That's really what a go-home show is all about. It would be nice to already have people convinced before Monday that they want to buy the pay-per-view, but when the show is over, you want them to go, you know what, damn, even if the rest of the card sucks, I gotta see this match. That's what a lot of people did with Money in the Bank, although not as many as I had thought, based on the buy rate, but they did the best job they could possibly do. I've heard, you know, different opinions. For the most part, people seem to love this segment, and I'm in that camp. I just thought that this was the saving grace. Without this segment, or if this would have gone a different way, this show would have been horrible. I mean, absolutely a complete and total bore. Some good wrestling, but for the most part, it could not have been saved. And I felt like this segment did a lot to help save it. Punk also showed footage from that YouTube video that Rock did up in the mountains a couple of weeks back when he did a tremendous promo. I mean, one that I raved about and linked to on Twitter and Facebook. when he was just ripping into John Cena and talking about the fact that people see through him. The reason that the men and all those people don't like him is because they can spot a phony a mile away. They smell bullshit. It was just great. And they showed highlights. They showed bits and pieces of Rock's promo on this show. Probably just to keep it fresh in people's minds that, you know, Rock is in fact facing Cena next year at WrestleMania. So I thought that was kind of interesting. Although Punk was also ragging on The Rock as well, as he's been doing. He's been doing that a lot recently, in fact. I did find it interesting that at one point Cena was saying, you know, here's the deal. After SummerSlam, win, lose, or draw, I'm still in the main event of WrestleMania next year against The Rock, against Dwayne. What about you? What if you lose? Where are you going to be? And I thought that was a very interesting point because it's the truth. You know, Cena's going to be in the Super Cena spot regardless. You know, I'd like to see Cena a little more vulnerable. I'd like to see him lose a little more often. He doesn't always have to have the championship. And the fact is, without it, he's still going to be the guy in WWE. And as he said, he's already booked for WrestleMania next year in the main event. But what's even more interesting to me, and what I thought was kind of a ridiculous comment, is when Cena basically said, if you lose, you will go down as nothing more than a one-hit wonder. And he mentioned Buster Douglas, the boxer. He mentioned Milli Vanilli. You know, I think he may have had another example. And all I could think to myself was, one-hit wonder. Wow, that's some statement to make there about a guy who, let's see, was an ECW champion. But okay, I'll give you that. ECW, nobody ever really took it seriously. So let's throw that away. Punk was a two-time Money in the Bank winner and a three-time World Heavyweight Champion. In fact, CM Punk 2 years ago at this very pay-per-view coming up this Sunday headlined SummerSlam in a TLC match against Jeff Hardy, which he won. And he's a one-hit wonder because he won the championship a couple weeks ago. Wow. That right there, to me, was the biggest statement of what people in that company truly think about probably championships in general, but certainly any title other than the WWE title. I mean, that just says it all right there. One-hit wonder. Anyway, there was a scuffle at the end. Triple H got caught in the middle. Punk left, and he was shouting things at Hunter about the fix being in. Is the fix in? And somebody wrote me to say that he thought he saw Punk mouthing the words, I guess I have to bring backup or something. I didn't see it. I didn't see him say that, so I assume that's not what happened, or that person is just reading a little too much into it. If you have evidence of it, I'd be more than happy to watch the footage again. But that's kind of how they left it. Is the fix in? Who will Triple H screw over? That's a hell of a way to sell a pay-per-view main event. We'll see if it works for them. I don't think it will, because that brings us to SummerSlam here and the four matches that they officially have announced for this Sunday. Of course, the Undisputed Champion will be crowned, which, by the way, I find that to be another ironic statement. You know, years ago, WWE had the Undisputed Championship. Why? Because there was one singular champion. And now they're referring to it as the Undisputed Championship again. But they have a World Heavyweight title on SmackDown. Yet again, it shows us what they think of that championship. So they're going to crown, they claim, an Undisputed Champion this Sunday. Cena versus Punk, Triple H as the guest referee. Who will he screw? That's your main event. And as far as an outcome to this match, it's hard to say. It's hard to say because, as I've said before, WWE has a tough time making up its mind. More specifically, Vince McMahon is incapable of making a decision and sticking with it. Proof is Money in the Bank last month. Up until, if not the day of the show, the weekend of the show, the plan was Punk would win and Del Rio would cash in and win the championship. And obviously, he got talked out of it, I think, for the better. And WWE actually did something that was very, 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 very unlike what they normally do, which was allowing Punk to win. He left, showed footage of him at Comic-Con, and let him go on Twitter and post pictures of the belt and the fridge and all these different things. It was great, but it wasn't even their original plan. You know, and again, their focus right now isn't so much the storyline. To WWE, the big story right now in that company, the big angle, is Triple H. Triple H taking over as the COO, which, mind you, as far as storyline goes, is a big deal, don't get me wrong. But Triple H ain't going to sell tickets, unless he's wrestling. And even if he is wrestling, I don't know how many tickets Triple H is going to sell. So I just think their mentality is still somewhat screwy in that respect. So they don't even know what they're going to do yet. I'd bet all my money on it. Or at least the money I have left after the markets plummeted again. But If I had to venture a guess, my gut tells me that CM Punk ain't leaving with the WWE Championship, which doesn't mean John Cena is either. I could see them doing something perhaps where both guys lose, or maybe the title is vacant and held up and they do something with it at Night of Champions next month. In fact, I'm sure Night of Champions coming up in September will play a role in this somehow. Or perhaps Del Rio finally comes in, cashes in, and wins the title. Del Rio is another guy who right now has no match at SummerSlam, and I fully expect him to be there. But he's got no match. He has no match. Mysterio has no match. Miz has no match. R-Truth has no match. John Morrison has no match. Why are we paying $45 again? If we do. Somebody, please, explain this to me. It's impossible for me to conceive of them allowing Punk to beat John Cena twice, cleanly, pretty much cleanly, on pay-per-view. So obviously, something's going to happen here. I think they're making it out to be a little too obvious that Triple H is going to screw somebody. You know, especially Punk. You know, Punk is there saying, oh, the fix is in, the fix is in. And, you know, short of them doing something where it's a big swerve and Triple H costs Cena the match and Triple H aligns with CM Punk, which would be about the worst thing they could possibly do, I think it's all a swerve in that they want you to think Triple H is going to be partial towards one person, when in reality, I think he will pretty much call the match down the middle until something happens at the end, or there's a bump, an accidental bump, somebody gets shoved into him or something, and it causes him to react. If I had a venture or guess, and again, they've changed this so many times, but I would say Del Rio, there's a pretty good chance Del Rio cashes in and wins the championship on Sunday. I think it's finally going to happen. So I guess I'll go with that as my prediction for that. World Heavyweight title on the line, Christian defending against Randy Orton. Now, I know this is about the fifth or sixth match these guys are having with each other. And here's the deal with this. I've complained before that WWE has a nasty little habit of playing things up to the point where they just don't mean anything anymore. You have the same two guys against each other 3 or 4 months in a row on pay-per-view. And, I mean, that's how you build a program. The problem with them is that they have not built very many exciting programs. So at this point, people are like, oh, my God, another Orton-Christian match. And I'll tell you what, for the people who are complaining, guess what? Last I heard, they were planning for another Orton-Christian match at Night of Champions. So you might not like to hear that if that is, in fact, still the plan. That was at one point the plan. This ain't over yet. But here's why I don't mind it, because Orton and Christian are great together in the ring. They have an amazing chemistry. They're like peanut butter and jelly. They go together perfectly. Some guys just don't have a lot of chemistry. To me, I never thought Miz and Cena had great chemistry. I've never seen a Miz-Cena match that I thought just blew me away. And their WrestleMania match, I won't even get into that. But Orton and Christian from day one, that very first match, which might have been the first match they ever had. It would be interesting if somebody wanted to look into that. That very first match that set everybody into a tiffy when Orton beat Christian mere days after Christian won the championship on SmackDown. That match was awesome. I mean, it was a phenomenal match. Then they had a match at Over the Limit that was great. They had a match at the Fatal 4-Way show in Joe. I know it was Fatal 4. It was Capital Carnage, Capital Punishment. I will get it right one of these days. It was Capital Punishment in June. They had a match, also very good. Money in the Bank, I thought they had a great match, even with the somewhat crappy finish. So to me, what this means is we're in for a guaranteed 10 to 15 minutes of pretty cool stuff at SummerSlam. And on a show where I can't necessarily count on the fact that, for example, Sheamus and Mark Henry are going to have a great match, it's good to know that we've got Orton and Christian in our back pocket. They just work great together. I can watch them all day long. So is it played out? Yeah, it probably is. I would love to see them move on to something else. But keep in mind, what else is there? I mean, really, think about this for a second. What else is there on SmackDown? That roster is even worse than Raw right now. Do you really want to see Mark Henry inserted into the championship picture against Randy Orton? I sure don't. Daniel Bryan's got the briefcase, but they're not putting him in a championship match for at least a couple of months, so he's not going to be moving up anytime soon. Who else do you have? Sin Cara? He's first coming back from a suspension. He's not getting a title shot. Who else is there? Your options are very limited. Sheamus? Well, maybe. But then again, we've seen Orton and Sheamus so many times, I can't even count. The reason that we're seeing so many matches in large part is because they don't have anybody else right now on that show, unless you move some people over from Raw. I mean, what else do you want them to do that you're going to get as many good matches out of it for? I mean, it's very limited. So as long as they continue to have great matches, I wouldn't have more than another one or two. If they do another one at Night of Champions, I would have to say, okay, that's the cutoff. But, you know, Orton Christian at SummerSlam on a card that has very few matches, give him 20 minutes. They'll have a fantastic match. I have no problem with that. And as far as what happens in that match, I am, if they are doing another match, under normal circumstances, I would say Orton's getting the belt back. But I'm going to go ahead and say Christian retains the championship. How, I don't know. I do think Christian will leave SummerSlam with the title, and perhaps Edge will play a role in this. And I say this because Edge just did an interview. Edge has done a couple of interviews. He did an interview with a website in the last day or two. And he made a comment when he was asked about upcoming commitments and whether or not we're going to see him again soon. He did say that he is planning to be, or was told to be, at SummerSlam, which I assume he would not be at SummerSlam unless he was going to be on camera. So I am expecting that Edge will be on camera in some capacity, and if he is, that he would somehow play a role in that match. I'm not saying physically. I don't think physically they would allow him to do anything. Maybe he'll be at ringside watching, and maybe there'll be a backstage promo where he'll ask Christian, hey, what's gotten into you, man? What's up? You know, or something like that. So I don't know if Edge will play a role in this match physically, but he is scheduled to be part of the pay-per-view. Then we have Sheamus and Mark Henry, one-on-one, a battle of the big men. Hard to call. Sheamus seems to be crawling his way out of the doghouse. He's been getting a bit of a push again recently, and apparently he's either a babyface now, or at least as a babyface for the feud with Mark Henry. Mark Henry, they've done a tremendous job of building him up as a monster, an unstoppable force. He's taken people out like Big Show and Kane, and I guess he literally took out Vladimir Kozlov. We're not going to see him again. And Mark Henry is getting the biggest push of his career in WWE in the 14 years that he's been in the company. It took this long to really push him the right way. But again, with Mark Henry, not exactly the best worker in the world. You're only going to get so much out of him. They've done a masterful job. Now he's in there with Sheamus, and Sheamus is a good wrestler. You know, Sheamus is a really good worker, but I don't remember ever seeing them go one-on-one. If they did, maybe once, I don't remember. What kind of match they're going to have, it's anybody's guess. The interesting part is who goes over, because like I said, it looks like Sheamus is getting a renewed push on SmackDown. Mark Henry has been getting a big push. He's been barreling through people. At some point, Henry probably should either lose or at least face somebody that gives him a tough challenge. I could see this match going to some sort of indecisive finish. Maybe the two of them brawl to the outside and get counted out, or you know, these two big boys are just beating the crap out of each other, and the referee's trying to break it up, and he puts the count on them, and they refuse to break the count, so he throws the match out. My gut tells me we're going to have more than one match here, so if this is the first, then you don't need a decisive finish. So I'm not picking Henry or Sheamus. I think there's going to be some sort of indecisive finish to this match. And then we have Beth Phoenix and Eve, or rather Beth Phoenix and Kelly Kelly, I should say, for the Divas Championship. Beth Phoenix all the way. That's it. There's not much more to say about it. Beth Phoenix has been underpushed and underutilized for a long time now. And whether you want to say that perhaps CM Punk, her boyfriend, had something to do with her getting a push or not, I don't know. And I don't care. It's nice to see a woman that actually knows how to wrestle get a push. And God bless Kelly Kelly. She's, you know, a good-looking girl and all that. But she don't deserve to be women's champion right now. And quite frankly, it's comical. Every time I see her, she's got that belt raised up above her head. I think she sleeps that way. I really do. I think when she goes to bed, she lays down horizontal, holds her arm up with the title, and she actually sleeps like that. I don't think I've ever seen her since she won the championship in any position with that title other than holding it up in the air. It's all that she knows how to do, poor girl. So hopefully Beth will pry the belt from her fingers on Sunday, beat the crap out of her, leave her laying. And we'll start to get some real competition in that division because, again, I've said before, if you don't know what to do with the women and you're going to just send them out there for 30-second matches every week, just abandon the women's division. Just get rid of it. But if you're going to do something with it, Beth Phoenix, it's a fine place to start if you want to make her the face of your women's division. So just some quick notes here on the SmackDown spoilers. SmackDown, this will air on Friday night, so at this time it hasn't aired yet. If you do not want to know what happens on Friday night, you might want to skip this, move on another 10 minutes or so. I'm going to run through some of these real quick here. The biggest news coming out of the SmackDown tapings actually was a title change. And no, Christian is still the world champion, but in fact, Ezekiel Jackson has lost the Intercontinental title. The new champion is Cody Rhodes. So Cody Rhodes continues to get the big push on SmackDown, which is good to see. When the Legacy broke up, I think a lot of people figured DiBiase would be pushed to the moon. I certainly did. I mean, John Cena himself, no greater authority than the WWE champion. once said in an interview that DiBiase is the one young guy in the roster he really sees the most upside in, and he could see him main eventing WrestleMania against him within 2 or 3 years, and that would have been about 2 or 3 years ago, and we see where things are now. But, yeah, so Cody Rhodes is the new IC champ, following in his brother's footsteps, always nice to see. Beth Phoenix, who I just got done talking about, teamed up with Natalya to beat Caitlyn and AJ in squash fashion on this show. Beth pinned AJ, and Natalya put the sharpshooter on poor Caitlyn after the match. Boy, that sounds like a human wrecking crew right there. Beth Phoenix and Natalya. I can't think of two better women to build your women's division around than those two. Let's see what else happened here. Alberto Del Rio defeated Daniel Bryan, who got beat up after the match by Wade Barrett, so that continues that feud. That's another match, I guess, that I could see added to SummerSlam at the last minute. In fact, maybe they'll splice something into the broadcast on Friday, and they'll actually announce Bryan versus Barrett, perhaps, at SummerSlam, which, think about where we were a year ago. You know, a year ago was, for all intents and purposes, the big blow-off to the Nexus feud. They had the Nexus of 7-on-7 against Team WWE. Nexus got beat. One of the big blunders of the company in the last several years. But when the Nexus was first formed, Wade Barrett kind of took on the role as leader, but Daniel Bryan was in that group as well. And as I understand it, one of the plans that they had talked about over time, because obviously over time all factions fall apart. It happened with everybody. It happened with the NWO. It happened with not Hart Foundation so much. They just kind of fell apart when people left. But there's always been problems within groups. And Nexus would not have been any different. It would have been a power struggle from within. It probably would have resulted in a feud between Barrett and Bryan, with Bryan turning babyface as he did. So in a way, it's kind of like here we are a year later getting the feud that we never did have a chance to get last year, which is Daniel Bryan and Wade Barrett, two of the founding fathers of the original Nexus, one-on-one against each other, and two fine wrestlers as well. I think if they do have a match on Sunday, and I don't know that they are or not, but if they do, I think it could be one of the show stealers of the night, quite frankly. Mark Henry apparently beat the hell out of Johnny Curtis, the annoying guy. We've seen promos for him with all of his cliches over the last couple of weeks. I've only seen some of them, so I'm not all that familiar with Johnny Curtis. I've only seen very limited bits and pieces of him, which I think is good for my own sanity. He got the hell beat out of him by Mark Henry. That brought Sheamus out, another stare down just to build to their match at SummerSlam. And at the end of the show, Randy Orton beat the Great Khali with an RKO. That sounds craptastic. As far as a SmackDown main event is concerned. That's pretty much it. That was SmackDown spoilers for this upcoming Friday show, the go-home show, the official go-home show to SummerSlam, Sunday on pay-per-view. So there you go. The other big news of the day here, just to mention really quick, WWE has hired a new person to come onto their creative team, Kevin Eck, who was the person behind the Ring Post column on the website for the Baltimore Sun. He's done a lot of really good interviews with a lot of top-flight talent from WWE in the past. Vince McMahon, Stephanie McMahon, I believe, Triple H, Steve Austin, John Cena, a whole bunch of different people. And I've enjoyed reading his columns online, pretty good stuff. And he apparently is going to be surrendering that column. I believe he is beginning with WWE later this month, so sometime in the next couple of weeks, obviously after SummerSlam at some point. And he will be working in creative. I don't know exactly in what capacity. I don't know if he'll just be another member of the team, if he'll be working in a specific division, or what have you. But I think it's interesting. You know, here's a guy who is a former journalist, and not only just a former journalist, but a columnist, a wrestling columnist, the type of person that WWE would typically spit on and frown upon. And you know, he's not exactly what you would call a quote dirt sheet writer, which I hate that expression, but. They did allow their talent to be interviewed by him, but that's only because he worked for a legitimate, respectable publication like The Sun. And it'll be interesting to see how long he lasts. I'm already taking bets to see how long he lasts. He's moving to Stamford, so he's really committed to this. He's uprooting everything. He's moving to Connecticut, and he's going to be working there full-time. And I give it about, 8 months. So 8 months from now is what? What is 8 months from August? Is that April? So right around WrestleMania next year. I want everybody listening to mark that down. I want you to remember this. In 8 months from now, I want you to email me and let me know if I was right or wrong, because I'm going to forget I even made this bet tomorrow. I give him 8 months before he either quits or gets fired. People don't last very long in WWE Creative. They really don't. There are a few people that have been there for a number of years. You know that Brian Gewirtz, probably the longest reigning current writer that they brought in, which came in pretty much, I think, at the tail end of the Attitude Era. But aside from him, a lot of faces have come and gone. People who are just frustrated with how things work behind the scenes in WWE. And, you know, maybe if Triple H is truly being worked into a bigger role creatively and with the developmental system and all that, perhaps he'll be, you know, a positive influence and a more sane influence than Vince McMahon tends to be. I don't know. But, hey, you know, best of luck to the guy. Hopefully it'll work out. And, I don't know, 8 months later, I think he'll be back with the Sun. But that's just me. Let's go to your questions here. Bonus mailbag. Get to run through some more of these here this week. Tyler writes in, "Dear Solomonster, can you please elaborate on the whole concept of Triple H, quote, re-signing John Morrison? I thought the first time he said that 2 weeks ago, he just made a mistake. But he comes out the next week and once again says that he re-signed him. We all know he was hurt. If I'm not mistaken, he was written off by laying on the ground backstage after what could have been assumed to have been an attack by R-Truth. The injury was not that long ago. Why in the world are they acting like Morrison left?" Because they don't know what they're doing. Perhaps the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. I think it's just a situation where perhaps Triple H did misspeak, and they just decided, all right, we already said this, so we just have to stick to it. You know, perhaps Morrison, in his absence, his contract happened to expire. It's not all that unrealistic to think. He was out for a few months, and perhaps somewhere in there, his contract either was coming up for a renewal, or it just ran out, and they worked out a new deal. So I wouldn't get too bent out of shape about it. Alex from Tijuana, Mexico writes in, "Dear Solomonster, just finished listening to episode 171. Great show as always. You mentioned foreign listeners at one point, and that got me thinking. I know I'm not the only one who listens from Mexico, so here's a challenge." Oh, a challenge. It's laying down the gauntlet here for all foreign Solomonster Sound Off listeners. What country besides the U.S. has the most foreign Solomonster Sounds Off listeners? Or as he calls them, Solomonster Maniacs. Send your emails and vote for the foreign country with the most Solomonster Maniacs in the world. Well, let me correct you there. Anybody who's listening to this show right now, if you are in fact from a country outside the U.S., I know for a fact we have listeners all over the world. I've heard from people from Canada, Mexico, a lot of people, an abundance of people, in fact, for whatever reason, from the U.K., Finland, Australia. Let's see, where else? India, Saudi Arabia, Iraq, Afghanistan, some soldiers stationed overseas, South Africa, Denmark, Romania, New Zealand, the Russian Federation, which I thought was kind of interesting. Is that what they're calling it now, the Russian Federation? All over the world, Ireland. So wherever you are, email me. Let me know where you are a listener from. And depending on how many emails I get, I guess maybe we'll add them up or just read some of them on the air, and we'll see from which countries we have listeners in. Got a letter here from Aaron. "I've come to notice that TNA has pretty much abandoned the global / legend / TV title. What was the point of Eric Young winning it if they were just going to forget about it?" Well, you're trying to apply logic to an illogical situation. Don't do that. It's not a big enough angle for TNA to really give two shits about. I mean, if they don't care about it, then why should you? This letter here comes from Ant. "How do you think the careers of deceased wrestlers would have worked out had they not met their maker? I think WWE would not have been that much different than it is today, but do you think Owen Hart would have won the WWE title? Would WWE have not gone all PG paranoid if Chris Benoit was still around? Could we have seen Randy Savage show up on Raw? Would Mr. Perfect have had one last big run? Maybe the Hollywood Blondes would have reunited. Maybe it would have been Monsoon and Heenan commentating during the Gimmick Battle Royal. I know they are all hypothetical and probably pointless, but I would still love to hear your thoughts on that. I'm 2/3 of the Triple Threat, a regular listener since episode 50, and loving the show. Keep up the great work." Boy, that's a tough one. I've said before, I've been asked this question about Owen Hart. As much as I loved Owen Hart as a performer, I met him. He seemed like a really nice guy. I hear a lot of good stories about him. When Owen died, he was 34 years old, which, at the end of the day, it really doesn't mean much. I mean, Bret Hart, for, you know, his own brother, didn't win his first WWF title until he was 34. So who's to say that Owen would not have at some point won the championship? I think had Owen come up in the business and had Owen come up in WWE at a different time, at a later time, he would have easily been a multiple-time world champion just by the virtue of how things are handled in terms of championships these days. I mean, you have guys that are far less deserving than Owen would have been who were 3- or 4-time world champions. I mean, they refer to Dolph Ziggler, who is a tremendous talent, as a former world heavyweight champion, which is a joke. He never even physically held the title. But back then, would Owen have won the title? I've said before, I don't think so. I don't think Owen Hart would have ever been WWE champion. I really don't. And quite frankly, I don't know that he was right for that role. I don't think Owen was ever world championship material in WWE. Maybe in some other promotion. In TNA, for sure. I mean, TNA would have made him the crown jewel of the company. And that would have been fine. He would have had, like, Kurt Angle, great matches with everybody he's in the ring with. But would Owen have been WWF champion? No, I don't believe he would have. Chris Benoit, you know, Benoit was being transitioned at the time of his death to a role in ECW. He was going to be the ECW champion and almost be more of an influence as far as almost like a trainer to the younger guys. I think ultimately that's how he would have ended up. Mr. Perfect, would he have had one more big run? He had one more big run. It came in 2002 and 2003. Could they have done more with him? Absolutely. How many final runs can you give somebody? You know, Kurt Hennig was a hell of a performer. He was about 42 or so when he died. He didn't have that many runs left in him. He got one more run in WWE, fucked up, got fired, and unfortunately, not long after that, passed away. So we'll never know. As far as you mentioned Monsoon and Heenan at the Gimmick Battle Royal at WrestleMania, that's the one that really puts a smile on my face, but also makes me very sad. I'm almost positive, like you said, we definitely would have had Monsoon and Heenan at WrestleMania. I mean, Mean Gene has done some commentary. If you go back and watch some of the older WWF matches, certain house show matches, house show events from MSG and the Philadelphia Spectrum and LA, the Sports Arena, Boston, that did air locally back in the day on television, Mean Gene would call some of the matches, but by and large, Gene was a backstage interviewer. He was a correspondent. That's why he, you know, he got the role with Heenan because he was an old face they brought back, and Monsoon was not around. And just the thought of, at the greatest WrestleMania of all time, most people say that WrestleMania 17 is top to bottom the greatest WrestleMania card that ever was. And the only thing missing from that show, all due respect to Gene Okerlund, was Gorilla Monsoon sitting in with Bobby Heenan on that Battle Royal. That would have been beyond perfection. It really does. It brings a smile to my face. It's a shame. It's a shame that Gorilla unfortunately got sick, and he went far too soon. But, you know, when I think of some other guys, I think of a guy like Rick Rude. You know, Ravishing Rick Rude supposedly at the time of his death was physically preparing and training for a comeback, an in-ring comeback to WWE. He had suffered basically a career-ending back injury, not unlike the injury that Shawn Michaels suffered. In fact, if you look hard enough on YouTube, you'll find footage of the match in Japan, which was back in, it's either 1993 or 94. In WCW, but it was over in Japan at a Japanese show, and there was a championship match between Rick Rude and Sting, and they had the ring was almost, it was on a raised platform, and Rude is outside, and Sting, I think, did some sort of dive over the top rope or through the ropes or whatever, landing on Rick Rude, and as Rude fell back, the small of his back, his lower back, basically hit the edge of the steps. There were, like, if I remember correctly, 2 or 3 small steps, and then you were kind of in the aisleway. So it was one of those deals. And he hit in exactly the wrong spot. I mean, it looked, knowing at the end of the day that that was the injury that caused his in-ring career to come to an end, you watch that back and you just wince. He was out for a couple of years. You know, he came back, he was the bodyguard for DX, then he went back to WCW. And the belief was that he was coming back to WWF to at least try his hand at an in-ring return when he died. That would have been cool to see. What impact would he have had? Would he have won the world championship? I don't think he would have won the world championship. It probably wouldn't have had any impact. It certainly would not have changed the course of history in WWF, but it would have been cool to see him get that chance. Brian Pillman, ahead of his time in many ways. A lot of the stuff that we see and hear CM Punk doing now is borrowed, even if he's not directly borrowing it from Pillman. Pillman was the first to really invest in his character, to say outlandish things to get people's attention, to break out on his own and do something that got him noticed when, at that particular time, somebody as small as Brian Pillman was really never going to get a legitimate shot. Everybody knew he was a great in-ring performer. He wrestled some of the best matches in WCW for years, and he won the
some of the light heavyweight level championships and stuff like that. But when he invested in that character, that loose cannon character, and Eric Bischoff hatched that wonderfully brilliant plan on his part to make everything seem as real as possible and to work the boys and to work the office, and they actually physically drew up documents that gave Pillman his official release from WCW so that he could show up at an ECW show and do this and do that. And the first thing Pillman did, was he got into negotiations with WWF. At a time when I don't believe Bischoff knew what he was doing. And unfortunately for Pillman, I think, who wanted to stay, at the end of the day, he wanted to stay in WCW. He was in that car wreck. He wrapped his car around a tree and suffered some pretty severe injuries. And at that point, he was just hoping that WWF would still take him, which they did. Remember, when he came in, this was after his auto accident. When he came into WWF, even when he first came in, he was never, ever the in-ring performer that he once was. You know, his ankle had to be fused together. He didn't have the mobility. He was in constant pain. It was really a shame. So, physically, if Pillman did not die and he would have been around for many more years and he would have been there at the height of the Monday Night Wars, physically, would he still be wrestling? Maybe. The matches that he would have had would not have been great, but it wasn't about the matches at that point. His character was the type of character that he had. Pillman would have fit in perfectly in the Attitude Era. I mean, perfectly. And imagine, you know, him and Steve Austin were best friends. They came up as tag team partners. Austin still wears the chain around his neck, which Pillman gave him as a gift. Imagine Austin at his peak through his feud with Vince McMahon. And Austin had some great feuds with Mick Foley and The Undertaker and The Rock. But imagine if Brian Pillman were still around. And with Austin at his babyface peak as the WWF champion, if he could have a feud and the promo battles back and forth with him and Brian Pillman, just wow. I mean, that would have been something else. Again, would it have changed the course of history? I don't know about that, but I think Pillman, maybe more than any other single performer of all the mainstream performers in either WWF or WCW who passed away around that time, and maybe even ever since, with the exception of Benoit and probably Eddie, would have had the biggest influence of all. I mean, it would have been something to behold. That's for sure. And, you know, one other name that I'll throw in there, of course, is Eddie Guerrero. I mean, Eddie Guerrero, at that point, his time of death, he was about 38, 39, perhaps nearing the end of his physical rope. I think he still would have been competing with, you know, for a couple of more years. Would he still be wrestling now? You know what? Probably. He probably would be. Maybe he'd probably be one of these guys that would be teasing retirement, and maybe at WrestleMania this year or next year he'd have his final match or something. And then he would have gone into the Hall of Fame. Unfortunately, he went into the Hall of Fame after his death and was not there to enjoy it and hear all the wonderful things people said about him. But Eddie was a huge influence in the industry. He had a lot to contribute at the time of his death. He was going to be world champion again, whether or not it would have been at that TV taping the day that he died or the next month for the next pay-per-view or whatever, who knows. But he had a couple more championship runs left in him, a couple more big WrestleMania matches. I've said before, you know, the original plan for WrestleMania 22 back in 06 was for Shawn Michaels to have a match with Eddie Guerrero. It was not originally going to be Shawn Michaels and Vince McMahon, which, God bless Shawn Michaels, he carried Vince to one of the better matches that he's ever had. But by no means was that match, you know, that match couldn't touch a potential Shawn Michaels-Eddie Guerrero match. Are you kidding me? Could you imagine what, for all the great things that people say about Shawn Michaels and Kurt Angle at WrestleMania 21, who had one of the all-time great matches, could you imagine an Eddie-Shawn match at WrestleMania 22? I know Eddie's body at that point was also kind of breaking down. He was bigger. He wasn't necessarily the Eddie Guerrero of 5 years earlier, but still. That would have given us some WrestleMania memories for years to come. I think as a wrestling fan, that was probably the biggest thing that we never got was an Eddie Shawn match. Andrew writes in, you know, the main event for SummerSlam falls flat. It should be a ladder match. Why not? Well, perhaps because we just had a Money in the Bank pay-per-view with two Money in the Bank ladder matches. Can we cool it on the ladder matches for just a little bit? Maybe just a couple of weeks? Maybe? Can we, please? Derek from Atlantic, Iowa writes in, had a random thought while watching Raw. I know your feelings on just randomly turning people heel before WrestleMania, but hear me out on this one. What if at SummerSlam during the title match there is a double heel turn where Triple H screws Punk out of the title, but only to embrace Cena? having known about the plan the whole time, therefore establishing a corporate 2.0-type faction made up of Johnny Ace, Triple H, and John Cena, against an ROH rebel faction made up of CM Punk, Colt Cabana, and the Kings of Wrestling, Claudio Castagnoli and Chris Hero. I know it's a recycled storyline, but with Cena getting new ring gear soon, as the rumor suggests, and how Triple H is officiating the match, I think it could be a possibility. I think it would be a decent angle. What are your thoughts? Well, as an idea, I think it's actually pretty cool. Is it going to happen? No chance in hell. But as an idea, it's interesting. You know, if they were actually willing to go that far and turn Cena heel, and it's not going to happen. I mean, Cena actually talked about it on television on Monday night. He actually was teasing people, say, I have the five moves of doom, and I can't work, and I should turn heel. And that right there cinched it for me. He has said before on his Twitter that people ask him, you know, when are you going to go heel? Are you going to go heel? And he says, I don't go heel or face. I am me. I am who I am. And the fact that he brought it up on television is confirmation, all the confirmation I need that, you know, he ain't turning heel. It's not happening. But if they were going to, instead of just having him turn heel one day, which would be completely inexplicable, you need a reason. This is not a bad reason, you know, for him to embrace. You know, right now they have been building up this whole thing about corporate suck-ups, and they have Johnny Ace on TV now. Triple H is out there wearing a suit. We know he wants to go heel. He's been dying to be a heel again now for years. And I heard the rumors as well. Actually, Cena himself suggested on Twitter he might be getting new ring gear. But then again, he also said on Twitter that he's been calling for the championship belt to be changed up and redesigned for years, and I guess it's fallen on deaf ears. I'm not sure I believe that, but not a bad idea. If the Kings of Wrestling are coming in, as far as I know, they just have to, you know, get their medicals taken care of and sign the contracts. Colt Cabana had a dark match recently. I haven't heard what WWE thought, if they're going to sign him to a contract. Right now, he is not under contract. Punk is already pretty much a babyface anyway, so it wouldn't require much of a turn on his part. You know, it could work. But unfortunately, it's one of those things you get kind of excited about. But like I said, there's just no chance in hell that it's going to happen. Nico from Cleveland writes in, Dear Solomonster, would it not be interesting if WWE started booking more heel versus heel and face versus face matches to make outcomes slightly less predictable to real fans who can spot outcomes from the get-go? Real fans. That's an interesting thing to say. It would make things interesting every now and then. I wouldn't make a habit out of it, so I guess I'm kind of against the idea, and I'll give you Exhibit A. Actually, I'll give you two of them. Cena and Mysterio actually had a hell of a little match that they got the crowd into, but you'll notice at the beginning of that match, for a good chunk of that match, there was no reaction whatsoever. It's because people didn't know what to make of it. You know, and that might be an extreme example because Cena and Mysterio are the two biggest stars in the entire company, especially to kids, you know, merchandise, stuff like that. But then you look at R-Truth and Jack Swagger. They had a match in the championship tournament a couple of weeks back. You had two heels, two people that, even though they're entertained by Truth, they boo him. He's a bad guy. Swagger, I don't think they give a shit about, so they boo him. And they didn't know how to react. You could hear a pin drop in the arena. So face-versus-face matches can work if you do them sparingly. Heel-versus-heel matches practically never work. Never. I mean, it's highly, highly rare because people, I mean, just by the nature of them being a heel, if they're a good enough heel, people hate them, they boo them, and now you got two people like that in the ring, and I mean, who are the people supposed to get behind? What's their reaction supposed to be? Are they just supposed to boo nonstop for 15 minutes? It never works that way. It actually makes for a bad match because it seems like the crowd is bored and they're just not into it. By the way, I forgot to mention when I mentioned the SmackDown spoilers before. So again, you might want to skip ahead about 30 seconds if you don't want to hear this. But The fake Sin Cara, I guess we can call him, the phony Sin Cara, was on this show. Apparently it was Hunico, who's been a developmental talent toiling down in Florida now for what seems like years. For at least this one week, played the role of Sin Cara. He did the jumping trampoline entrance and everything, didn't botch anything, and had a pretty good match apparently with Tyson Kidd that I guess will air on Friday night. So, I mean, based on the different reports people have sent in, it did not appear to be the regular person under the mask, so if not, it was probably Hunico. As far as I know, it was just for one week, which I said it last week, I'll say it again. I don't get it. I don't understand the logic behind it. If Sin Cara himself is being brought back and is going to be back next week, once the suspension expires, then what was the point of having to put somebody fake That is not the real Sin Cara under the mask for a meaningless match with Tyson Kidd for 1 week before SummerSlam, a pay-per-view that he isn't even on. I don't get it. And lastly here, Ryan writes into your Solid Monster, I've heard folks say how cool it would be if John Cena had the WWE title at WrestleMania next year so that Rock vs. Cena could be for the championship. I think that idea sucks. For one, it would basically give away that Cena is going over, as Rock can't even be considered a part-time talent. By the way, that doesn't necessarily mean that. It doesn't necessarily mean anything, actually. In fact, I would not put it past them to have Rock win the title and just come out the next night and vacate the damn thing. Anyway, Ryan goes on to say, that match is huge on its own and does not need the title, especially with how little titles mean. If you had Rock, Cena, no title, the two world title matches, and hopefully an Undertaker match, those are potentially four huge main event caliber bouts. I think Cena having the title at WrestleMania next year would be a waste. What do you think? I think you hit the nail on the head. I don't think that Rock has to be fighting for any championships. The Rock on his own, like him or not, is larger than life. He is larger than the WWE Championship, just by virtue of him wrestling on the show at WrestleMania. It feels special. It will sell extra buys. You know, they may crack the million buy rate barrier again next year. People don't care if Rock is wrestling for the title because they know that come the Monday after the show, it's not like Rock's going to be wrestling again. It's not like Rock and Cena are going to have a series of three or four straight matches on pay-per-view. Ain't going to happen. So I agree. The match doesn't need the championship. You can find two people more deserving. And again, Cena does not need the title. I don't want John Cena to still be the champion heading into WrestleMania 28. That's not what I want to see. By the way, speaking of WrestleMania, I may as well mention it here. Steve Austin did an interview and I guess he was asked about it, but he kind of teased the fact that, you know, perhaps there would be a match at WrestleMania next year between himself and CM Punk. He didn't say there would be, but he didn't say there would not be. And I find this fascinating, just because I listened to an interview that Edge did. It wasn't the same interview that Edge did where he mentioned he would be at SummerSlam. It was an interview that he did on Right After Wrestling, which is co-hosted by Jimmy Corderas, a former WWE referee of many years and a good friend of Edge's. And in talking about his injury and the spinal stenosis that essentially ended his career, he told the story about having the MRI done and getting a phone call from Vince McMahon, who basically said, I don't know how to tell you this, but your career is over. You know, with the wellness policy the way it is and their doctors and everything, they would not give him clearance to wrestle. They said, you are simply not allowed in our ring in active competition because, of course, you know, it would be too much of a risk on their part if, God forbid, something happened to the guy. And he explained this, and he also talked about how it was nice to have Steve Austin as a resource because Steve Austin, of course, has had neck issues before. In fact, when Edge had spinal fusion surgery back in 03, he relied heavily on Steve Austin for advice because Austin had gone through the same thing about 3 years earlier. And even in recent years, you know, I guess Steve has been a good resource for Edge as far as advice and, oh, you know, I feel this tingling, I feel this certain sensation, let me call Steve and see if this is normal, stuff like that. And he made an interesting point in this interview, and that was that if WWE would not give Edge clearance to compete, and you know that it killed Vince McMahon, it killed the people in that company to accept the fact, with so few main eventers that they have at their disposal, to basically say, Edge, you're not allowed to wrestle, you're done. Like, we're not going to put you on a part-time schedule, you're finished, that's it. Nobody wanted that. So, when you consider that, Edge said that in the interview, he's talked to Steve Austin before, and as far as he knows, the injury that Edge has is the same exact, like right down to the vertebrae. The same exact type of injury that Steve Austin had to his neck. Where there's supposed to be a certain amount of space between the spinal cord, I guess, and the spinal column, and there isn't as much space. In fact, it's almost a situation where the two are either pushed up against each other or are nearly pushed up against each other, which creates this pressure. And his neck looks exactly the same as Steve Austin's. If that's the case, if that is true, Edge makes a very good point in this interview. He doesn't think that Steve Austin would be allowed to wrestle inside of a WWE ring, even if he wanted to. He doesn't see, if that's the case, how Steve would get clearance, given the current policy and everything in place, to compete in the ring even one time. Now, you could say, well, I'm sure WWE, you know, Steve Austin picked up the phone and told Vince McMahon, hey, I want to wrestle Punk at WrestleMania, Vince would probably cream his pants and would, you know, put their names up on the marquee tomorrow if he could. But if that's the case, if that is true, if what Edge says is accurate, and he claims, again, you know, maybe Steve knows something he doesn't, he didn't want to talk for Steve Austin, that would be disrespectful, but he just doesn't see how he would get clearance. If it's the same exact injury and they won't let Edge wrestle, why would they let Steve Austin wrestle? Why would there be a double standard like that? So that's just something to keep in mind for the people who are keeping hope alive. Believe me, I would love to see CM Punk and Steve Austin at WrestleMania. Can you imagine a double bill? Rock and Austin each having their first matches in about 7 or 8 years. Rock on top with Cena, Punk underneath with Steve Austin. Throw an Undertaker match in there trying to go 20-0. You got yourself a hell of a WrestleMania lineup right there. But just something to keep in mind. If that is accurate, I don't even know that Steve Austin would be allowed to, even if he wanted to. If you have questions for the Sound Off, the email address is thesolomonster@gmail.com. I think there may have been one or two people who sent me something either through Twitter or Facebook or something and mentioned that they were hoping it would be in the mailbag. And I didn't remember to include it. There's a reason I ask people if you want stuff mentioned on the air, your question, a shout-out, which, again, I can't do all the time, but if you want the best chance to get an answer or mentioned on the air, it has to be via email. Everything's organized in one place in the inbox. I log in, I go through them, I log out. It's very simple, very quick. You know, if it's Twitter or Facebook, I'll try to respond to you directly, but if you want something specifically for this podcast on the air, email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Twitter.com/solomonster. I've got a lot of new stuff, pictures I've been posting and stuff, far more even than Facebook. And so if you haven't checked that out, you might want to get on there. Some pretty interesting stuff, including something I did post on Facebook, which was myself in a lucha mask. In fact, it's a near authentic replica of a Rey Mysterio mask. And you might be wondering, well, Solomonster, what WWE show did you plunk down $50 or whatever the hell they charge these days for a Rey Mysterio mask? Haha. What happened is a friend of mine, his parents actually went on a cruise. And one of the places, I guess, that the cruise docked was in Mexico. And he had told me, you know, years ago he had gone to Mexico himself. And I guess in shops, and I've never been to Mexico. So if you're from Mexico, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong. But he remembers being there in all these different shops. Obviously, you know, the mask and Lucha Libre, very big down there, obviously. And you can find Mexican wrestling masks and lucha masks all over the place. You know, some are leather, some are maybe a cheaper material, but they're pretty good. They're better than the cheap plastic ones you might buy from WWE shop, I guess. And he kind of regretted not buying one. You can negotiate the price down there. I think they wanted $20, and he negotiated it down a little bit, but ended up not buying it. And so in talking about this, he mentioned it, and I said, hey, you know, maybe try to pick me up one of those authentic lucha masks. It'll be my little memento from Mexico. And so sure enough, his parents came back. He, for whatever reason, he told them to buy the Mysterio mask. I didn't care one way or the other. In fact, I was almost hoping it would be, you know, maybe a mask that somebody like Psychosis or somebody would wear or something like that. But they came back with an authentic-looking Rey Mysterio mask. It's got that cross in the middle, the things that come off the sides, and ties in the back. You know, you tie the rope or whatever in the back. And pretty cool stuff. So I can say that I now have an official Lucha Libre mask. I decided to wear it during Raw Monday night at his house as we watched the show. And I said, listen, you know, do you have any sort of authentic, you know, alcoholic beverages here that I can hold when you snap the photo? And I was handed a Corona, and there you go. So if you want to check that photo out, you can find it on, I posted another one, actually, too, two of them. So that one you can go on Facebook.com/TheSolomonster. And I would be remiss if I did not thank each and every one of you, because after the last episode, 171, when I mentioned we were this close from breaking 1,000 friends, we have, in fact, broken the barrier. In fact, we actually shattered it. I'm now well over 1,030 friends and counting on Facebook, so the march to 1,100 now begins. We're still a ways off from 5,000. I'm not too worried about that. That's the limit where I can't add friends anymore. I don't think that'll be a problem for some time. But if you are a new Facebook friend, welcome aboard. Thank you for joining. If you're not, what the hell are you waiting for? Facebook.com/TheSolomonster. All one word. You go on there. You have to send me a request. I will accept it. You'll have access to all of the wonderful discussions and secret photos and all the different things I post on there. You'll be among the first to know when the podcast is up. I post an update on there. There's a whole thread where people leave comments and questions and stuff. Every now and then I'll do a Facebook Q&A, which obviously you have to be on there, specifically if you want to participate in that. So go to Facebook.com/TheSolemnMonster. If you hate Facebook, if you absolutely detest it, I hear you. And if there's one person that's worth going on Facebook to friend, it's me. So come on, join in the fun. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Go to iTunes, type in Solemnmonster Sounds Off. You'll be hooked up. Good stuff. So I hope everybody enjoyed this extra bonus weekday edition of the Sound Off, episode 172. Don't get used to it. I'm actually off this week, so I was able to do an extra show. And believe me, I would do more if I had the time. Perhaps in the future I will, but I will take it where I can get it, and I'm sure you will too. So hopefully you enjoyed it. Spread the good word of the Sound Off. Thank you to all of our new listeners. Be well, stay safe. We'll see you right back here next time on 173.
Let me tell you something, fella.
This is Joel from Northern Ireland.
Hi, I'm AJ Grimaldo.
And quite simply, the fastest 60 minutes on the internet.
The Solemnmonster Sounds Off on scoops.com.